somebody who's on the line right now knows a little bit more about this than we do, because, hey, Bomber's just Bomber and I'm just the Mad Māori. Joining us on the line, former Prime Minister Chris Hipkins. Welcome, Chris.
Kia ora, good to talk to you.
Good to be with you too, mate. Now, we're trying to figure out, Chris, what sort of budget this was, because it was boring, it was glib, there wasn't much in there. And then we've been talking to a couple of economists, Cameron Bagri, for example, this afternoon, and we're still unclear as to how they intend on maintaining a pathway to surplus for 28-29, which is just around the corner. What are your initial thoughts?
This was a budget that was asking those with the least to sacrifice the most. I know everybody likes to try and sum up a budget in a couple of words, but the reality here is there's a lot more to a government budget than that. And when you get through all the smoke and mirrors and all the spin, this is a budget that's punching down. It's saying to people living in state houses, you're going to have to pay higher rent so that we can redirect that money into the accommodation supplement, which largely benefits private sector landlords. So having given landlords a big tax cut, they're now increasing the rents of state house tenants so that they can give more money to private sector landlords. And that's just one example of hundreds that we've been working through the budget to identify where those who have the least are being asked to sacrifice the most.
And I think that tends to be the overarching theme that's coming through so far. I mean, speaking to Matt Ross Kruge, our economist in the budget lockup, he seemed quite confused about this as well. But it seemed to be cut. And this is certainly Bomber, what the PSA and the NZCTU have told us this afternoon as well in their press releases. So, Chris, it seems they've cut until you get to the bone, and then it's about amputation because there's not much left there to cut. And also, there was no pathway to investing in the economy or a signal about what jobs we're all going to be looking to, I guess, invest in and motivate and build, right?
What Nicola Willis doesn't seem to recognise is that when you cut someone's job, you actually cut the economy. So if someone doesn't have a job, that's less money going into local businesses. It means they're not going out and spending money in local shops. They're not spending as much at the supermarket. They're not supporting local tradies. And the overall economy continues to go backwards. Removing job certainty has the same effect. So for 9,000 people who are potentially going to lose their jobs in the public service, they are going to go backwards. But for the tens of thousands of others who don't know whether they're going to be in the 9,000 or not, they're living in limbo at the moment. That means they're not out there spending money because they're not sure whether they're still going to have a job. The government haven't created a plan here that says we're going to create more jobs. They haven't indicated to Kiwis how they're going to actually get the economy moving and create jobs. As a result, if you're a young Kiwi, you're probably looking at this budget and going, well, they've got those guys across the ditch seem to have a bit of a plan, so maybe I'd be better off over there.
Chris, for whanau who are living in their cars, for whanau who are having to make decisions about whether or not they've got the money to go and get medical treatment, for whanau who feel locked out of the housing ownership, for whanau who are just holding on in the cost of living crisis, how are they going to feel knowing that maybe in 2029 New Zealand might be 30% GDP debt? I mean, for their pain that they are going through right now, how are they going to look at something as box ticking as that and go, oh, well, that's wonderful?
Well, Nicola Willis crows about bringing the surplus forward by a year, despite the huge carnage she's creating to do that. But we've got to remember that before the election, the books were forecast to be back in surplus a year before the new surplus target she set. So she had already pushed the surplus out by several years. Despite all of her big talk about balancing the government's books, she's actually made everything worse and is now basically crowing and saying, oh, well, it's a little bit less worse than I made it the first time around. The reality here is people can't live on a government surplus. People are looking to this government for leadership. They're looking to this government to at least acknowledge that it's damn tough going out there at the moment. And all they're getting is backflapping by the government saying, look at this, what a great job we're doing, while tens of thousands of more people lose their jobs and families struggle to pay when they go to the supermarket.
One of the biggest winners here, Chris, the banks. They are going to be levied with a fee of $70 million a year, but they made $7.2 billion in profits last year. A $70 million levy on an industry that's making $7.2 billion seems remarkably lucky for the banks.
Well, and what's more concerning is that you've got the economists out there already saying, including David Seymour, but then what, he's an economist, he just thinks he is, saying that the banks are going to pass that on to consumers. You know, so if the banks are charged an extra levy, which they pass on to consumers, whilst making record profits, Kiwis are actually the ones who are going to pay this levy, not the banks. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the government asking banks to contribute more when they're making billions of dollars in profits. But there's no guarantee here that that's what's going to happen. Yeah. What's more likely to happen, and David Seymour said the quiet bit out loud today, is that banks are just going to ask Kiwi families to pay this extra levy.
Yeah, I think David Seymour says a lot of things out loud that we pick up on, such as he said on the on our show this morning, Chris, when it came time to talk about pies, that Shane Jones looked as if he inhaled his really, really quickly. Because, and I hate to say that as a bit of jest, but it seems that the only winner here was New Zealand First. You know, but I've never seen that much money go into the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade so quickly. We've got rail, we've got the gold card being turned into a form of identification. It seems, Chris, as if Winston Peters has won the day.
Well, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors there too. So if you look at the increased funding for Ministry of Foreign Affairs in the budget, you then turn to the back of the budget, Nicola Willis is cutting more money out of it than she's putting in at the front
there
end of
go.
The budget. So, you know, there is smoke and mirrors here. You know, there's hundreds of millions of dollars of extra funding going in, and then at the end of the budget, hundreds of millions of dollars being cut out again. And Winston Peters says that those hundreds of millions of dollars of cuts are never going to happen. So there's your first fiscal hole in the budget already.
Mm. Hey, Chris, we're going to leave it there. We know you're busy. We're going to move on to now Brad Olson before Tamaportaka, leader of the Labor Party, former Prime Minister Chris Hipkins. Thanks for joining us.
Good to talk to you guys. Take care.
Good luck.
Wow, I mean, back of the book, eh? Go to the back of the book and find out what's really going on.
Well, there are real question marks over who actually benefits and who's paying for it. The $780 million from the pockets of the poorest seems quite extreme.